so loved violence that he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. How does God's love abide in anyone who has the world's goods and sees a brother or sister in need and yet refuses help? Little children, let us love not in word or speech, but in truth and in action. Friends, what does that look like? What comes to your mind when I talk about helping others and sharing God's love for them? What does that look like to you? Jim Kettlewell is the son of a Presbyterian minister and grew up in a family that valued community service. One morning, now many years later, and retired from the bakery business, he drove to a nearby bookstore. Jim loved to read. When he got there, he went to the store's cafe, ordered a coffee, and settled in with a book. About an hour later, he was getting ready to leave when he heard a man behind him talking on his cell phone. Jim looked around and noticed the man was trying hard to his voice down, and he spoke politely, but he was noticeably upset about something. No one else seemed to be paying him any attention. Jim decided to stay in his chair and listen some more instead of leaving. Gradually, he was able to make a little sense out of the man's story. He learned the man had received a paycheck for his first 2 weeks on a new job. He had deposited it in the bank the day before, but the bank had put a hold on it until the funds cleared. That seemed to be the problem. The man was living in a motel with his daughter, and he was begging the guy at the hotel to let him stay another night. From what Jim could tell, the hotel manager was unbudging. So the man's next call was to a homeless shelter. Then Jim listened as the man called several homeless shelters, only to be told that they were full or they couldn't take a single man with a child. With each call, Jim could tell the man's voice got more and more desperate. It wasn't just about the man. It was about his little daughter. That's when I started hearing my father's voice in my head, too, says Jim. My father was a really giving man, and I could hear him saying to me, "Jim, it's good to have a little money, because sometimes a little money can fix a big problem." And that's when I knew that I would help this man. But wait, what if it was a scam? What if this man was setting people up? Yet Jim quickly dismissed that thought. He decided the encounter was not a setup. It was not a scam. He decided it wasn't a coincidence either. He decided it was something else. It was like the divine fates had this plan for me, he says. Jim's a man who is used to relying on his gut instincts and his faith. So in the bookstore, he relied on them once again. He watched as the man finished his final call, cross something out of a notebook, and put his head in his hands. It was time for Jim to act. "Young man," Jim called out. The man looked up. Jim motioned with his hand for him to come over and sit down next to him, so slowly the man got up and came over. "I heard what you were going through," Jim said. "You have a problem. Now let's figure out together how to fix it." Jim found out that the man's name was Rick. He was working as an electrical apprentice on a construction site at a nearby university. And his boss had let him take some time off that afternoon so he could handle a personal situation. The personal situation was figuring out where he was going to sleep that night with his 3-year-old daughter. He moved here with her. She was 3, and he found a daycare for her so that he could work. The mom wasn't in the picture anymore, But then his paycheck didn't clear, and he ran out of money. The hotel was going to kick them out and put all their belongings out on the street. Jim ended up withdrawing $300 and giving it to Rick. Rick tried to hold back, saying, "No, that's too much. Just enough to cover tonight would be fine." But Jim said, "No, there will be other things that come up in the next couple of weeks. It's okay." "I was still hearing my father's voice," Jim said. And his voice was saying, "Jim, you can help this guy. You can solve this guy's problem. And it won't really affect you in any way." And this was true. It was a relatively small amount of money for me. But for Rick, it was everything. Jim drove Rick back to work. And they stood and they shook hands before Rick headed off to the site, and Jim drove away. Jim never saw him again, but he remembers that day. "Everything I've ever been taught by my parents and my church and my Sunday school teachers led me to this one moment with a stranger in a bookstore. All I had to do was act."
When 7-year-old Ella Tryon was hospitalized last year, she turned to one of her favorite activities for comfort, coloring. Now she's collected crayons to make sure young patients across the country can share the joy. "I like that you can come up with something in your imagination and draw it on a piece of paper," says Ella. Hooked up to a feeding tube and IVs, Ella was confined to her room at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital while being treated for a severe allergic reaction. Her mother, Jackie, went to the hospital playroom in search of crayons. She was told the hospital could not maintain a sufficient supply due to cross-contamination concerns. With the help of her mom, Ella set out to make the hospital as colorful as its name. Dubbing her project Color Me a Rainbow, she began soliciting donations through word of mouth and social media. In October, she delivered 13,132 boxes of crayons and 254 coloring books donated from across the country. Neighbors and friends were driving a half hour to bring 10 boxes of crayons because they just wanted to be a part of it, says Mom Jackie, whose basement is filled with crayons and books. Ella, who has become known as the Crayon Kid, writes a personal note to each recipient hospital as well as to donors. And now hospitalized kids who receive crayons and their parents are paying it forward by donating new boxes of crayons back to Ella's cause. The little girl has big dreams. She wants to donate 1,000 crayon boxes to every children's hospital. In the U.S. and plans a special delivery of 5,000 boxes to St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. And after she's reached every children's hospital in the country, she plans to start over and donate again because there will always be new patients in need. "I want to help as many people as I can, as often as I can," Ella says, "and I'm not going to stop."
Drew Sanchez is a middle-aged mom who works for a local newspaper. One day, she stopped by her local supermarket to pick up something to take to work. As she walked down an aisle, she noticed a family picking out groceries. The mom, in her 20s, was pushing a shopping cart. Her young daughter, probably 3 years old, rode in the cart, and two boys, probably 6 and 8, walked alongside. The boys were helping their mom put items in the cart. Drew didn't think much of it and walked on by. But a few minutes later, she saw the family on a different aisle, and this time she noticed the older boy was holding something in his hand, a small calculator. The boy was adding up the price of items his mother wished to buy. Drew glanced into their cart and noticed that all that was there were a few basic items: bread, milk, butter, eggs. At that moment, Drew felt a tug in her heart and knew she had to do something for this family. The reason is that years before, Drew herself had been that young mom. 20 years earlier, Drew had been the struggling single mother of two children. Her ex-husband didn't provide any support. She remembered the days of working a full-time job, having to put her kids in after-school care, and times when she couldn't even afford to pay for it. She also had to be very careful about what she bought. But 20 years later, she saw her younger self in that mother of three children. I could tell there was this family just trying to survive, Drew said. I knew these children weren't going to get all of the food they needed, and I knew their mother knew it too. And I imagined how heartbreaking that must have been for her. A few minutes later, Drew ran into them again on a different aisle. That was God telling me, okay, here's your chance. It was God saying, you're going to do this, and you're going to do it now. Slowly, Drew approached the family, unsure of how the mother would react. Excuse me, Drew said cautiously. I don't mean to offend you at all, but I would like to buy your groceries. There was a pause, and Drew didn't know what would come next, but then the young mother started crying. Really, she asked. Yes, Drew responded. Get everything you need, and I'll meet you up front. Instead, it turned out that Drew ended up getting them a $100 gift card so the mother would not feel like she had to skimp. When she gave it to them in the middle of the produce section, the mother gave her a big hug. Now they were both crying uncontrollably, and before Drew could leave, both boys ran to her and gave her hugs as well. Drew says she has gone back to the store numerous times, always hoping to run into that family again, but she never has. Still, she now looked at all the other shoppers differently. She wonders what their stories are and what kinds of things they are going through. That day was a profound moment, she says, for me. In that moment, it was as if I learned what life is really about.
We've all had moments over our lives where we have, in our own way, felt like we had an opportunity to share God's love, to do something for someone else, or we have experienced someone else doing it, or we've had someone else do it for us. I'd like to invite you to take just a couple of moments to turn to that person sitting next to you and share a moment where you have been able to help someone else, or someone else has helped you, or you have seen someone help another in a profound way, and how God was at work there. Take just a couple of moments.